Lantian had never harmed you. I opened my mouth. It is the same, is it not? The dissenters and I represent death and destruction, although many of them have done nothing more than speak the truth. His gaze drifted to the softly rolling flames. You represent a dynasty that has subjugated and decimated their families, stolen from them the lives of the ones they love, their gods, and even their rightful heir. You did none of those things, and yet that is what they see when they look upon you. They see the opportunity to take their pound of flesh. His words sat like stones in my liquor-warmed belly, and I couldn't stop myself from saying, I'm sorry. For what? His brows furrowed. Wheezing from the huge gulp of the whiskey I swallowed, I blinked rapidly. For what was done to your people, I told him, my voice hoarse. To your family, to you. I know I said that last night and you didn't want my apologies, but I need to say it again. Castile stared at me. I think you've drunk enough whiskey. He paused. Or maybe you should have more. I snorted, like a little piglet. What you've done doesn't mean I can't still feel compassion. I started to take another drink, but thought twice. Whatever kind of whiskey this was, it seemed to have a far quicker effect than anything I'd had before. What you've done doesn't mean I suddenly don't care about what is right and wrong. What was done to your people is horrible. My gaze dropped to the golden liquid in my glass, thinking of all those names on the walls. Who knew how many were never listed? And what is being done to the people of Solus by the Ascended is horrible. It is all terrible.
That it is, he said quietly.
I guess I get why they hate me. I thought of Mr. Tullis and took a larger drink. I wish they didn't.
As do I, which is one of the reasons why we must marry.
My gaze flew to his as I almost choked. That's the part I don't understand. How you've come to that conclusion or why. How will that get your brother back? How will that help with limited resources? How will I be free? There was a sharpness to his gaze then. There is a chance that some may still disobey my commands. Retribution can be a strong motivator. I myself love and enjoy the taste of revenge, as I know you do. I started to deny that, but he'd been there when I turned on Lord Mazin. He would know that my denial would be a lie. I must return home to help ease the concerns of the others, where you will be surrounded by many who believe that anyone from the Kingdom of Solus is the Lamia in the flesh.
Lamia?
It's a creature with fins for legs and tails for arms that hides under the beds of children, waiting until the lights are turned off. In the dark it makes its way out from under the bed to then suck the life from them.
Oh, my lip curled. It's not real, or at least I've never seen one. But as a small child, both my brother and I fought to keep the lights on at night, he said. I could see him as a precocious child hiding under a blanket with wide golden eyes. My gaze snagged on how the muscles of his arm curled as he lifted the glass of whiskey to his lips. Well, I could almost see him as such.
Wait, I said, confused. How does it get out from under the bed if it has fins for legs and tails for arms?
His lips twitched. I believe my mother once said it wiggled and slid like a snake.
That's extremely disturbing. My nose wrinkled as I glanced at the decanter of whiskey, wondering if I should have another glass. I also don't understand the tails for arms part.
No one does.
He looked away, dipping his chin as he dragged his fangs over his lower lip. My gaze, my entire being, seemed to be snagged on that act. A subtle shiver
danced over my skin, and again. The point I'm trying to make is that even though I have ordered that no one is to harm you, you may still be in danger, he explained. For some, the idea of revenge is far greater than the fear of certain death. It took me a bit to pull my thoughts away from this Lamia creature and the glimpse of his fangs before I could focus on the point of this conversation. And you believe that marrying me will remove me from danger, making sure that people know you are part Atlantean and will become my wife, should make you off limits, especially to those who still have some fear of death and actual common sense. He took a drink. You will no longer be the maiden in their eyes. You will be my fiancé. In their minds, you will become their princess. I mulled over what he was saying, and I didn't know if it was weariness tugging at me or the liquor dulling my emotions, but I was able to process what he was telling me without throwing my glass at him, which I was sure he appreciated, and probably why he offered the drink in the first place. What are you thinking? He asked. If I should have another glass of whiskey?
You can have whatever you want.
Whatever I wanted. I looked at him, and the wealth of want rising inside me told me that another glass of whiskey wouldn't be wise. Leaning over, I placed the empty tumbler on the table. You're marrying me to protect me? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. And no.
While there was warmth in my stomach, my chest felt ice cold. What does that mean?
It means that marriage will provide you with safety, and it will also provide me with what I want, and what my kingdom needs.
How will marrying me secure your brother's release, or give your kingdom what it needs? He took another drink.
What do you think those who rule over Solus value more, the ability to create more vampires, or to remain living?
I jerked my head back at the question.
I would hope the latter. I would hope so too, he agreed.
And a moment passed. My father believes that Malik is either dead or beyond saving. I sucked in a sharp breath. He does? When Castile nodded, I didn't know what to say. That is terribly sad. The line of his jaw tightened.
It's the reality of the situation, and I cannot blame him for it. But I don't believe that Malik is lost. I refuse to believe it, he stated adamantly,
and I hoped for his sake that he was right.
Many Atlanteans want retribution, not just for what the Ascended have done to their prince, but for the countless lives they have taken and the land and future they stole from us. My father is quickly becoming one of those who wants retribution. And the thing is, Poppy, we can take our revenge. Atlantia rose from blood and ash. We are no longer a fallen kingdom, not by any sense of the word. We haven't been for a very long time. We are a kingdom of fire.
The tiny hairs all over my body rose.
We may have retreated after the war, but we did so for the sake of our people and the lives of the mortals caught between us. But that did not mean we suffered, that we have become less than the kingdom we once were. In the time since the war, we've rebuilt our numbers, and we've stretched far and wide from Atlantia, entrenching ourselves in every city within Solus, opening the eyes of those who are ready to see the truth.
My heart rate picked up as I watched him lift the glass to his lips once more.
Many have spent the last 400 years preparing to take back the kingdoms, Castile said,
and I might have stopped breathing then.
They want to make war with Solus, and if they succeed in convincing my father, countless people will die. Atlanteans, Wolven, mortals. The land will once again be soaked with blood, but this time there will be no retreat. If my father is convinced to make war, Atlantia will not fall. We will not stop until all the Ascended and all those who support them are nothing but ash.
And you don't want this, to take back the kingdom and end the Ascended?
I could understand if he did, but I couldn't stop thinking about Ian and Tawny and all the innocent people who would be trampled in the process.
He eyed me over the rim of his glass.
Sometimes bloodshed is the only option. If it comes to that, I will not hesitate to pick up my sword, but my brother will be one of the casualties. There is no way he will be kept alive if we go to war against them. I need to free him before that happens.
And you think your people will not want to go to war if he's returned to you? I asked.
It's not only about him, but if I'm successful, I believe so. If not, at the very least, it may give mortals time to prepare, to either choose their side or escape as far as they can to wait it out. I'd rather not subject this land to another several hundred-year war.
He cared about the mortals? Even the ones who didn't support Atlantia?
That sounded like the Hawk I knew, but not the one who earned the name the Dark One.
Unsettled, I smoothed my hands over the hem of my tunic.
How will marrying me accomplish any of this? I'm just the maiden, and you and I both know that means nothing. The gods did not choose me.
But the people of Solus don't know that, he countered. To them you are the maiden. You were chosen by the gods, just like you are the figurehead of the Ascended to Atlantia. You are a symbol of them to the people of Solus.
A half-grin formed.
And you are the queen's favorite.
I shook my head. All of that may be true, but I don't see how that accomplishes anything.
You don't give yourself enough credit, princess.
You're incredibly important to the kingdom, to the people, but even more so, to the Ascended. You are the glue that holds all their lies together.
I stiffened.
Imagine what will happen when the people of Solus learn of you, the chosen maiden, marrying an Atlantean prince, and not turning into a craven. Not even after a wicked kiss.
He grinned at me, one dimple appearing. My eyes narrowed.
That alone will open many eyes, and through our union, we would be able to gently introduce the mortals to a world where the Atlantean people are not defeated and scattered to the wind. But it would also show them that the gods must approve of such a union.
After all, based on what the Ascended have told them for generations, if the gods don't approve, they will seek vengeance. The people of Solus don't know that the gods sleep, and the Ascended rely on them never discovering that truth.
Nodding slowly, I thought about the people. The people would think the gods approved.
And what do you think the people would do if the Ascended turned on the one chosen by the gods? The very gods who, according to the Ascended, keep the people of Solus safe from the craven. If the Ascended turn on you, the kingdom built on lies will begin to crack. It will take very little to shatter the whole damn thing. And if I remember anything about Queen Ileana, is that she is a very clever woman. She knows this.
Jarred by him saying her name when he did so very rarely, I saw the thinning of his lips. But not clever enough to know that the kingdom of Atlantia has grown to the point where it's a considerable threat to their rule.
They know Atlantia still exists, and they've fortified their armies, their knights.
An icy shiver wrapped its way down my spine at the mention of the royal knights. They were the army of Solus, heavily armored, exceptionally trained, and utterly imposing. I'd only ever seen them in the capital, and even then it was rare to see a knight, since they were camped in the foothills of the Elysium Peaks.
Many had taken a vow of silence. But we have been very careful to keep how much we've grown and accomplished quiet, making sure that the dissenters are seen as a ragtag group of people supporting a lone prince who is hell-bent on securing the throne. They've grown complacent over the many years. He arched a brow as he took a drink. And I do believe many scholars have said that the ego is the downfall of many, many powerful people. Even with the knights and the entirety of their guards standing behind them, it would not be enough for them to defeat us. This is where you come in, or more accurately, where we come in. Together, married, joined, you and me.
I get it,
I interrupted with a low growl. The hue of his eyes deepened. Even with all my considerable talent, I won't get anywhere near them or the temples. I tried many times while I was in Carcedonia. But you are my way in. I exhaled heavily. You think with me, by marrying me, you'll be able to negotiate the release of your brother and bargain for the return of some of our land. I want everything east of New Haven. Everything east of New Haven? That would be the Wastelands and Pompeii and farther south, Spessa's End, and many more small towns and fields. Many of those places not even ruled over by a local ascended, he said. Many of those places they don't even use. It would be a fair request. It was a fair request. Solus would still maintain the major trade cities and the farmlands outside of Carcedonia and Macedonia, among others, but it won't be as simple as us sending a letter to them announcing our nuptials. Castile snagged my attention. Once the Ascended realize that you've gone missing, they may believe you have come to an unfortunate end, at the hands of the Dark One. He inclined his head in my direction.
Or any number of very bad people.
Either way, Queen Illyana, nor any of the Ascended, will believe that we have come together without seeing that you're still alive, healthy, and whole. We will meet with them on our terms and present them with their options. Give in to your demands or face war? I finished. War may come either way, but if they agree, we may buy the people of Solus some time. Castile nodded as he placed his arm back on the mantle. What you're requesting is fair. They have your brother, and the loss of land wouldn't hurt Solus that much, I said. I would hope that they would have the common sense to agree. They may not be able to make more vampires, that is, if they haven't captured others to use for that. An image of Ian formed, and my stomach rolled. And if they don't agree, then there will be war. My gaze lifted to his. And if you meet with the king and queen and they agree, will you let them live? His chin dipped as a slow, cold smile spread across his striking face. Once I have what I want and what my kingdom needs, they will not remain on Solus's throne. They will not remain breathing. Not them. Not her. I looked away, tensing against the desire to recoil. I could understand it, especially after what they'd done to him. But it was hard to forget those months, those years after the attack, when all I had was Ian and Queen Illyana. But I had seen the walls of the chamber underground. I'd seen Castile's scars. I had my suspicions before I even met him. I knew what he claimed was true. I didn't need to see or know anything else to believe that. And you plan to allow the Ascended to live? Who would rule Solus then? I cut myself off because I wanted to ask, what about Ian? To prevent war and repeat history, they would have to be allowed to live. Things would have to change, though. No more rites, no more mysterious deaths. They would need to control themselves. And you believe that can happen? You said it takes months, if not longer.
But they can control themselves. They already do in some cases, and a lot of Ascended are old enough to do so. They can make their bite pleasurable. They can feed without killing. I'm sure many would volunteer. Or the Ascended could even pay for the service. Either way, if they want to live, they will need to control their bloodlust. The fact that they are not the cravens they create is proof that they can. They just never had a reason to do so.
Do you think it will work? I asked.
It's the only way the Ascended have a chance of survival, he said.
But if he was wrong, if he failed, if his brother was already gone? I looked up at him and could say with 100% certainty that he would kill them all or die trying. My throat constricted. And afterward, with or without your brother, I'm free? He met my gaze.
You will be free to do as you choose.
So, this marriage will not be real. There was a beat of silence before he said,
It's as real as you believe anything about me is.
He wasn't looking at me then. His attention was once again fixed on the flames. The line of his jaw was like marble. I truly have no idea what that's supposed to mean, I admitted, folding my legs under the blanket. How will I be free if we marry?
I will grant a divorce if that's what you decide.
I gasped before I could stop myself. Divorces were practically unheard of in Solus. They had to go before the court to even petition to have one, and it was, more often than not, rejected.
Is divorce common in Atlantia? I asked.
No, he answered. What is uncommon is for two Atlanteans to marry who don't love one another. But when people do change along with their love, they may divorce.
I got snagged on the whole part about marrying when there was no love being uncommon. If it was rare, then how could he so easily go into a union with someone he obviously didn't love? The answer was easy. He would do anything for his brother. So, this marriage isn't real. I drew in a shallow breath. And what if I refuse? What if I say no?
I hope that won't be the case, especially after everything you've seen. But this way, you won't be used to send a message to the Ascended, and you won't be used by them.
It's a way out.
He dragged a hand through his hair.
It's not a perfect one, but it is one.
It was a way out, a windy, twisting one, but I knew that if he had never come for me, I would be in Macedonia, veiled and suspicious, but having no real idea of the horror that was happening, the future I was going to meet. Castile wasn't a blessing in disguise. I didn't know what he was, but nothing would have been okay if he hadn't entered my life. I lifted my chin.
And what if I still say no?
I won't force you to marry me, Poppy. What I already have to force from you is distasteful enough, given everything that was taken from you before you even met me.
His chest rose with a heavy breath. If you refuse, I don't know. I'll have to find another way to free my brother and somehow hide you away so that no one, including my people, can get their hands on you. Surprise flickered through me, and without thinking, I reached out to him, reading his emotions, searching for a hint of scheming or slyness. Anything to indicate that he wasn't being truthful. What I felt was sadness, heavier and thicker than before, and I tasted something sour in my mouth, something that left me with the sensation of wanting to shed my skin. Shame. I felt shame coming from him, and it wasn't buried deep. It was there, just below the surface.
You don't like this, do you? The situation I'm in, that we're in.
A muscle flexed in his jaw once more, but he said nothing. That's why you aren't just hauling me straight to the capital right now, demanding the exchange, I said. That would be quicker. It would be easier.
There would be nothing easy about giving you to them.
His eyes flashed an intense amber before he looked away.
And stop reading my emotions. It's a bit rude.
My brows lifted. And forcing me to drink your blood wasn't?
I was saving your life,
he groused. Maybe I'm saving yours by reading your emotions, I shot back, pulling my senses back in. Castile pinned me with a dry look.
Please explain how you came to that conclusion.
Because it's a relief to know that you won't force my hand in marriage. And it did loosen some of the tension knotting in my chest. It doesn't change the lies and everything else, but it does at least dampen my near-murderous rage.
And the soul-shattering disappointment. But I wasn't sharing that.
So, I might not actually try to sever your head while you sleep. His lips twitched.
But no promises.
I didn't dignify that with a response. So, you will tell everyone we're getting married, and I'm supposed to act as if that is the case when we're around others. Then, once we're married, we will go to the capital? Castile lifted his head, gaze focused on the wall across from him.
Yes, but we will have to be convincing. It's not as simple as telling the world we're to be married. We must marry as soon as we arrive in Atlantia, before I take you to my parents.
My stomach hollowed. Do you think it's wise to marry before you even tell the king and queen you're engaged?
Not particularly.
There was a flash of a boyish grin, one I imagined he wore quite a bit when he was younger, and about to do something he knew he would get in trouble for.
My parents will be displeased.
Displeased? I choked on a laugh. I have a feeling there will be a stronger emotion.
Quite possibly. But my parents will seek to delay the marriage until they are sure it's true.
We cannot afford the time it will take to gain their permission. Permission I do not need, he said.
As I said before, my people want retribution. If they think this is a ploy to get back a prince they have already mourned, and if they value revenge over life, they will try something. Once you become my wife, you will be protected.
Your people seem... I trailed off.
His people seemed barbaric, but mine weren't much better.
Whether I claimed the Ascended as my people or not, I had been raised by them. And wouldn't I be just as violent if I lived every day knowing that the Ascended could arrive at any time to slaughter without question or punishment? I would be just as wrathful. A shudder worked its way through me as I stared at his profile, at the taut lines of his face and the shadows under his eyes. I realized that maybe Castile and I weren't all that different.
I understand.
His gaze flew to mine, his eyes wide.
What?
I understand why you're doing this. They have your brother, who was captured in the process of freeing you, I told him, my thoughts shifting to Ian. I can understand that you'd go to extremes to get him back. He turned to me.
Really?
I nodded. I would do the same. So I can understand and still not like it. I can hate that I'm nothing more than a pawn to you and still understand why I am.
You're not just a pawn to me, Poppy.
Don't lie, I told him, my heart squeezing. That's not doing either of us any favors. He opened his mouth and then closed it, seeming to rethink what he'd been about to say. There's a reason I understand, I told him. You would do anything to free your brother, and I will do anything to get back to mine. I'll agree to this if you promise to help me get to Ian.
Poppy,
I know what he is, and you know that I have to see what he's become. He turned fully to me. And what if he has become just like the others?
Just because he's ascended doesn't automatically mean he's evil. Don't...
I lifted a hand when he moved to speak again. You said that they can control their bloodlust if they want. Many of the ascended are evil, but just as many were good people before their ascensions, and they had no idea what the truth was. My brother... I drew in a shaky breath, squaring my shoulders. I have to see for myself what he has become. So that is the deal. I will temporarily marry you and help you free your brother if you help me free mine. Castile's head tilted as he stared at me for several moments. I had no idea what he saw, but then he nodded.
I agree.
Okay, I whispered.
You're not going to fight me on this.
I considered that. Not in front of others. Why would I? If them believing we're getting married keeps me alive, then why wouldn't I go along with that? I reasoned, frowning slightly. I would never have guessed that whiskey had such an amazing ability to clear one's thoughts. I don't have a death wish. Neither do I have a desire to be caged and used as a bag of blood. He flinched. It was small, but I saw it.
But in private, you will fight me tooth and nail? He surmised.
Kieran knows what you've planned, doesn't he?
He nodded.
I met his stare. Then in front of him and in private, I will fight you tooth and nail. I will not pretend to be the docile fiancé without an audience.
Understandable. He dragged his thumb over his glass. But if you want to pretend to be just that in private,
not going to happen.
Something glimmered in his golden eyes.
I think you will find that I can be impossibly charming. I glared at him.
Remember what you said about impossibilities.
I did. But this is truly impossible.
I guess we will see.
I guess we will. I told him, relaxing. This banter felt normal, at least for us. Castile eyed me.
I feel like this is a trick, and you're 2 seconds from trying to plunge that knife into my heart again.
I coughed out a dry laugh.
What good would that do? You'd only be annoyed, and the knife is not nearly sharp enough to sever your head or pierce your incredibly thick skull.
He smirked, finishing off the whiskey left in his glass before moving away from the mantel.
But it would give you great satisfaction.
I considered that. It would.
I knew it, he murmured,
placing the glass on the table. A couple of moments passed as I felt Castile's gaze on me. Do Atlanteans recognize the tradition of rings when they propose? I asked.
The ascended didn't in Solus, but many of the mortals did.
A ring was bestowed upon a couple's engagement, and then bands were exchanged upon marriage.
We do.
Then how believable is it that we are engaged if I don't have a ring?
Good point, he murmured.
I want a ring, I announced. I want an obscenely big one, like I've seen some of the wives of wealthy merchants have. Their diamonds are so large, they look like they should weigh down their hands.
He angled his body toward me. I will find you a diamond so big it will enter the room before you do.
Good. It took me a moment to realize that I was smiling. I wondered if I should be concerned by that as I thought everything over. I felt a little more at ease. What I had said to him about understanding why he was doing this was true. That didn't mean I had to like it or that reality didn't sting and hurt something fierce. But if Victor had taught me anything, if I'd learned anything from Queen Ileana and my time as the maiden, dealing with Duke Tierman and Lord Mazine, it was that being pragmatic and rational was the only way to win a battle and survive a war. I would go along with this, because this was how I stayed alive and got to Ian. I, like Castile, would do anything for my brother. And that included going from one viper's nest to another.
Chapter 11. I was to be married. That was the last thought I had before falling asleep, and the first thought I had upon waking, both of which I'd done alone. Castile had left shortly after I agreed, Delano having summoned him. I ended up falling asleep, and the only reason I knew he'd returned in the middle of the night was because I'd woken up at some point to the warmth of his body inches from mine. I'd lain there for far too long, listening to the steady sound of his breathing, fighting the urge to roll over and look at him. He was gone when I woke, and I was relieved, this time for different reasons than before. I needed to wrap my head around what I had agreed to, and I tried to do so as I stood in front of the dimly lit vanity in the bathing chamber, tackling the knots in my hair as if they had the answers to all my questions. The marriage was real, yet not. A business arrangement that would give both of us what we wanted. His brother, land, my brother, freedom, and maybe even an end to a war that hadn't even begun yet. Well, hopefully we would gain what we desired. How could I not agree? If I said no and Castile truly let me go, stashing me away where no one could find me, if that were even possible, I would still need to see Ian. This way I wasn't doing it alone. I may be Castile's key to the king and queen, but I had enough intelligence and common sense to recognize that he was also the safest and smartest path to my brother. But that wasn't the only reason I had agreed. Despite Castile's lies and betrayals, I knew that I wouldn't have been able to walk away, leaving Castile to save his brother and possibly even his people through different means. Even though I had been given little opportunity to discover who I was as a person, I knew enough about myself to realize that I wouldn't have found a moment of peace in whatever freedom I had, not after everything I'd learned, and not when there was something I could do. But marriage? It had been so long since little girl fantasies of weddings and the possibility of being tied to an ascended, something that at the time I hadn't known would never happen, had filled me with fear and panic. This marriage filled me with panic and fear too, but for very, very different reasons. We would have to behave as if we wanted one another in a way that went beyond the physical. We'd have to act as if we were in love. And that was dangerous. Even with my lack of experience in all things, I knew this. What I already felt for him, in spite of everything, felt like a slippery slope. It would be hard enough to pretend to be together so we could convince his people of our relationship and not be affected by it. There needed to be boundaries, lines. I was still a pawn, only now I was an active one. I couldn't forget that. I wouldn't. Another worry manifested. How were we going to convince anyone that we were in a loving relationship when I'd publicly refused the proposal and insinuated, rather clearly, that I thought he'd lost his mind? How was I supposed to even act? All I had as examples were my parents, and from what I could remember, everything about their love, the long looks and the way they constantly touched one another, had been natural. Something that couldn't be faked or forced. And the rest of the relationships I'd seen regularly were those of the ascended. And I'd never seen the Duke and Duchess touch each other. Even Ian never spoke of his wife in any of the letters he sent. Not once beyond announcing their marriage, something I hadn't been allowed to attend. Then, Queen Ileana's refusal to allow me to travel had been positioned as a safety concern. But now, I wondered if it was something more. I should have questioned more then, but I'd become complacent in the Ascended's absolute control of me. How did that happen? How did the people of Solus get to the point where so very few questioned handing over their children? Some even happily did so, feeling honored. Was it fear? Misinformation? Lack of access to education and resources? There were so many reasons why, and even more for those who had begun to suspect that things were not as they seemed, yet had made excuses. like I had, because seeing the truth was terrifying. And what if Castile's plan worked? I saw Ian and dealt with how that turned out. Then what? Would the Ascended truly change? Would the people of Atlantia be satisfied? And how would we know if the Ascended were following the new rules, living a more restricted life? Even if they did, I doubted the divide between those who lived in places like Radiant Row and the slums by the Rise would suddenly evaporate. The wheel the Ascended created would continue to turn, wouldn't it? Or would losing the Queen and King scatter the rest of the Ascended, forcing them into a new way of life? I didn't know the answers to any of that. All I did know was that the people of Solas couldn't continue to be preyed upon, and if I could help stop that, then I would. That was a purpose far greater than the one I'd lived with as the Maiden. It was real. It would change lives. It made me feel as if I'd been chosen for something that mattered. But none of that told me how I was supposed to act in a loving relationship. The Ascended always came across as if they were somehow removed from physical needs. But I knew that wasn't always the case. Though Duke Tierman's and Lord Mazine's perversions were not good examples of how to behave in a relationship. My heart beat too fast in my chest as a knock sounded. A moment later, the door cracked open and Kieran called out, "Want breakfast?" "Yes." Dropping the brush, I hurried from the bathing chamber. Kieran held the door open for me.
"Someone is very hungry."
I wasn't sure I could consume even a mouthful of food. I stepped out into the walkway to see that the snow had stopped, even though the wind still whipped through the trees, sending the fallen snow whirling across the yard. "Will we be leaving soon?" I asked. "Since the snow has stopped?"
"I believe Alistair and some of the others will leave later today to check the roads to our east, to see if they're passable. I hope so, since the storm didn't stretch very far to the west."
Meaning the roads from Macedonia, or even the capital, wouldn't be as impassable. "Do you think they realized we haven't shown at our next location yet?"
"I don't think so. We have time. Not much, but some," he said.
It was weird to feel relief, almost as if it were a betrayal of some sort, even though I knew it wasn't.
"So, Penelope, for once, I have a question for you," Kieran drawled as we entered the stairwell.
I glanced over at him.
"Okay.
How's it feel to be on the verge of becoming a real princess?"
"He told you already." I didn't know why that should surprise me. Castile had probably seen Kieran last night.
"Of course he did. I probably knew his plans had changed before he did."
My eyes narrowed. "I'm willing to bet his plans changed when he realized I was part Atlantean." He smiled, and the expression hid a wealth of mysteries.
"His plans changed well before that. But like I said, he hadn't quite realized that."
"But you did? You know him that well?"
"I do."
"Well, good for you," I muttered. He chuckled.
"I can't wait to see how you two are going to pull this off."
My pulse skittered like a wild horse. "What does that mean?" Kieran slid me a knowing look as we entered the bustling common area.
"Not a minute has gone by since we left the Blood Forest that you aren't threatening Castile's life."
"That's an exaggeration. There's definitely been several minutes have gone by." I cringed, but Kieran had a point.
"I guess we'll find out soon."
I was too nervous to wonder if anyone was shooting me hateful looks as we went into the otherwise empty banquet hall and took our seats at the table. Chairs had now replaced benches. Food was brought out, sausage and eggs along with those amazing biscuits. Somehow I got past the twisting of my stomach to snatch one of those. I was far quieter this morning as I ate my food. The reason why appeared just as I finished what I could eat. Kieran looked over his shoulder, and I knew who had arrived. Slowly, I peeked behind me.
Castile walked into the room with Alistair and several of the men at his side. Alistair spoke to him as Castile looked straight to where Kieran and I sat. Our gazes seemed to lock for a moment, and then I quickly looked away, heart back to thundering in my chest.
Castile will announce you as his fiancée.
Kieran lowered his cup.
It will be wise to behave appropriately.
My eyes narrowed on Kieran's profile. Do you think I'm going to scream in Castile's face and run off instead? A hint of a smile appeared.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Rolling my eyes, I peeked at the doors. The group had stopped just inside the room, speaking with Nail, who, like the rest of them, had a habit of seemingly appearing out of nowhere. Do you think he'll believe us?
Yet another question?
Kieran leaned back, crossing his arms.
Seriously, do you ever get tired of asking so many?
Apparently you don't, since you just asked three of them. He chuckled then.
I think it will be tough to convince Alistair.
I stared at him. That's really motivational, thank you.
You're welcome.
One quick glance and I saw that they were still by the doors. How do you know he will announce that I agreed to the marriage? Did he tell you?
No.
Then how do you know?
I just know things.
I pinned him with a bland look. I know you two are close, but something occurred to me. The bond. I read that some Atlanteans of a certain class and Wolven have bonds.
Did you?
He murmured. Yes, it is believed the Wolven are duty-bound to protect the Atlantean they're bonded to.
Are you going to eat that biscuit?
He asked. Brows knitting, I shook my head. You can have it. Kieran picked up the roll and immediately began tearing it into tiny pieces, reminding me of how the small rodents the healers kept in cages ripped apart their paper bedding. I shoved that image out of my head. I'm thinking the history texts had the part about the bond being with a certain Atlantean class wrong. It's a certain bloodline. Elemental.
You'd be right.
He popped a piece of the bread into his mouth.
I could live off this bread.
The bread is tasty. I kind of wished I hadn't let him have it. The bond between you two is more than just you protecting him, isn't it?
We were bonded at birth, and the connection is a lot of things, Penelope.
I was about to demand details, like if he could somehow sense what Castile was about to do or not, but the sound of approaching footsteps quelled the desire. My heart, which had only slowed down slightly, started pounding again. Castile and the men were coming over, and I had no idea what I was supposed to do. Smile prettily and behave as if Castile hung the very moon and stars each and every night? My shoulders tightened as I tried to picture myself doing that, and for some reason, the scars on my face became bigger and more visible in my mind.
Are you hyperventilating?
Kieran asked.
What?
I stared at my plate. No.
You're breathing very fast.
Was I? Oh gods, I was. Why was I behaving like...
You should calm yourself, he advised. As I said, it's very unlikely that Alistair will believe Castile. The others will follow his lead.
Yet again, I muttered. Not helpful. I didn't get a chance to demand to know why Alistair would hold that kind of sway. Before Kieran could respond, I heard Alistair say something to him, and honestly, it sounded like a different language. My ears only started to process the sounds when I heard Castile say my name. Blood rushed to the tempo of a pounding drum as years of expected behavior and grooming kicked in on an unconscious level. I felt myself standing. Castile touched the small of my back, the contact light, yet I felt it in nearly every part of my body. My gaze slowly lifted to his, and the intensity in those amber depths held me captive. I thought I saw something akin to concern settling into his features. Was I still breathing too fast?
Penelope, he repeated.
I'm sorry. Feeling a little dizzy, I blinked. Did you say something?
I asked if you were finished with breakfast.
Castile watched me closely.
Yes.
I nodded for extra emphasis.
Good.
He took hold of my hand as he tucked my hair back from my face, brushing the heavy strands over my shoulder. The act was an intimate gesture I wasn't used to, and the look that settled in my features told me that he was growing concerned. I needed to pull myself together. If I could stand and remain silent during Duke Tierman's lessons, I could behave as if I weren't about to fall to the floor now. Fixing a smile to my face, I turned to Alistair, as I pulled forth manners learned long ago.
Hello, Alistair. I hope you had a good evening.
A slight curve to his lips formed as he inclined his head.
It was. Thank you for asking.
He noted where Castile held my hand and then arched a brow at Kieran.
It's very polite of her to ask, unlike either of you.
Kieran sounded as if he choked on air, and on my other side I thought I heard a muffled snort. I squeezed Castile's hand, hard.
I'm learning that these two are not very well-mannered, I said. I apologize for their lack of consideration.
Alistair's gaze swiveled back to me, as Emile grinned from where he stood, speaking with Nail. A deep laugh left Alistair, crinkling the skin around his eyes. My lips parted in a soft inhale. That laugh. All I could think of was Victor, and my heart ached fiercely.
These two are definitely not ones I'd consider well-behaved under any circumstances,
Alistair replied. Castile looked down at me, and I thought I saw an apology in his stare, as if he weren't thrilled with how this might play out. He said nothing, even though Alistair waited, and others watched. He returned the squeeze, nowhere near as hard as I had done. Did he want me to read him? I opened my senses, and what I tasted all of a sudden was a mix of sour and vanilla. Shame and sincerity. He wasn't proud of this. Either that, or I was deciphering his emotions wrong. That could be possible, but I didn't think so. I nodded, and his lashes lowered, shielding his eyes for the briefest moment. And then I saw it. The mask slipping into place, curving up the corner of his lip in a smug twist of a smile. His features sharpened, and when he opened his eyes again, they reminded me of chips of amber.
I hear congratulations are in order,
Alistair said, drawing my attention to him. The laughter had long since faded.
The prince told me this morning that you accepted his proposal.
I did.
I must be honest, when he told me I thought I might have drunk too much last night. I didn't believe him when he said he was marrying, especially the maiden. She's not the maiden,
Castile cut in swiftly.
Not anymore.
He let go of my hand and moved it to my back again. I felt an inexplicable warming in my chest, one that left me greatly unsettled. Alistair cocked an eyebrow.
I would imagine she's not,
he said, and my eyes widened slightly.
But she was the maiden.
He shifted his attention to Castile.
Who she was maybe in the past, but that doesn't change that past.
The hand at my back flattened as Castile replied,
The past is irrelevant. Do you really believe that?
Alistair mused.
What I believe doesn't matter.
Castile's palm slid off my back, leaving behind a shiver. He took my hand once more.
What does matter is that everyone else believes that. Spoken like a true prince, your mother and father would be proud.
Alistair grunted out a short, dry laugh as his gaze roamed over me once more, lingering on the side of my neck, where my hair had fallen over my shoulder. There was no doubt that he saw the faded marks. The line of his mouth tightened.
I'm glad you're here, Penelope, as we've only had a few moments to speak, and I have many questions.
I can imagine, I murmured. Castile tugged gently on my hand.
sit with me. Nodding, I started for the seat I'd just risen from, but Castile moved to the chair at the head of the table. He sat, and it only struck me then where he planned for me to sit, not in a chair, but in his lap. I hesitated. There was no way I was sitting in his lap. Over my shoulder, I saw the others take their seats, while Kieran moved to stand at Castile's left, and Alistair took the chair to his right, where I'd been seated earlier. Castile looked up at me, the twist of his lips softening. What now filled his gaze was a challenge. My eyes narrowed, and he arched a brow. There was nowhere else to sit. The only other option would be to stand behind him like a servant, and I refused to do that. There was a space at the end.
"Would you like this seat, Penelope?"
Alistair offered. Knowing that seating at tables was often a demonstration of one's position, I knew I shouldn't accept the offer.
"My fiancé is upset with me,"
Castile announced, surprising me enough that I turned to him.
"I can't imagine Penelope ever being upset with you," Kieran commented, and I had the strongest urge to lean over and punch him.
"I know." Castile's smile was wider now, more real. The dimple in his left cheek was starting to make an appearance, and the hint of fangs caused my stomach to dip at the same time my ire spiked.
"But I admit, I deserve it."
I stilled, unsure what he was about.
"You're not even married, and you're already upsetting her,"
Emile chuckled.
"That's not a good start."
"No, it's not, which is why I must rectify this immediately. I'm sorry," he said,
the smile fading as his eyes met mine.
"Truly, it wasn't planned."
My skin pimpled. Was he apologizing for me not being prepared for this in front of others? Castile shifted, curling an arm around my waist. So caught off guard by his words, I ended up sitting sideways in his lap. He dipped his chin, and his lips brushed the curve of my ear as he whispered,
"I thought I would have time to speak to you first."
I nodded slightly. His lips were a feather-light caress across my cheek, and then he said louder,
"I didn't plan the proposal, and to be honest, it wasn't the very best, as many within Haven Keep witnessed. Even those at the table. She actually told me no at first." "That was not the only thing she said,"
Nail commented with a chuckle.
"Told him he was out of his mind. Told him a lot of things."
Did that Atlantean have a death wish? Castile laughed.
"It's true. But I won her over, didn't I?"
The answering masculine chuckles caused my skin to prickle with irritation. My tongue moved before I could stop myself. "That was after I threw a knife at your face." Alistair made a coughing sound as Kieran and my plates were removed and replaced with food.
"Excuse me?" "Yes."
Castile's eyes were like warm pools of gold.
"That was after you threw the knife at me. I haven't been the best of suitors,"
he continued, lifting my left hand.
"I promised her the largest diamond I could find as soon as we return home."
"Well," Alistair drew out the word as he picked up a fork.
"That is something that can be easily fixed upon returning. Our queen has just what you need in safekeeping."
His mother had a diamond ring? For Castile? For when he married? My spine couldn't be more rigid. Why had I brought up the stupid jewelry? I didn't even care about it since I'd never been allowed to wear any beyond the golden chains of the veil.
"Castile hasn't exactly been forthcoming with information on how you two met."
Alistair bit into his sausage, not taking the time to slice and dice it as Kieran had.
"I wanted to ask when we last spoke. How did you end up in the incorrigible hands of our prince, Penelope? I imagine someone of your status would have been hard to reach, especially by someone like him."
Castile let out a low laugh.
You should have more faith in my abilities to achieve what I want.
I tensed, feeling like those words were meant more for me than Alistair.
Be that as it may,
Alistair said with a wry grin. How did he find a way to you? Wondering how honest I was expected to be, and precisely what kind of rumors he'd heard, I decided to be as truthful as possible. In the past, I'd learned that most lies were successful when the little information given was the truth. He became my guard.
Well, that's not how we met initially.
Kestiel's hand that rested on the curve of my hip moved, causing me to nearly jump out of my skin.
It was actually at a brothel.
Someone at the table sounded as if they choked on their food. I was betting it was Emil. A fair brow rose as Alistair chewed slowly.
That was unexpected.
The Red Pearl isn't just a brothel, I corrected, turning a narrow-eyed glare on Kestiel. He grinned.
It's not?
Card games are played there.
That wasn't the only games being played there, Princess.
His thumb moved along the inside of my hip, causing my stomach to whoosh.
Penelope had a habit of sneaking out and exploring the city at night.
I nibbled on the inside of my lip as I tore my gaze from Kestiel. Had he known how often I did that? He had said that he'd been watching me for longer than I realized.
What I know of the maiden, and yes, Kestiel, I know she's no longer the maiden, but that was what she was,
he added before Kestiel could correct him.
The ascensions of the others were tied to yours, weren't they? Again, I'm sorry that you were raised in such a web of lies told by the Ascended.
Several at the table cursed at the mention of the Ascended. Thank you. And yes, you're right. I frowned slightly. Or they were. I don't know if their ascensions will be carried out now.
Hopefully they won't,
Delano remarked. I agree, I said quietly, thinking of Ian.
Do you?
Alistair asked. Truly?
I do, I admitted. I didn't know who or what the Ascended really were. I, like most people within the Kingdom of Solus, only knew what I was shown.
Then I expect many are blind to what is right in front of them, someone commented,
a younger man with rich brown hair toward the end of the table. Many live in fear of being ripped apart by the Craven, or displeasing the Ascended and angering the gods, I replied. Castile's arm tightened around my waist as his hand squeezed my hip gently. Was that some sort of message? I had no idea, nor did I care. The people of Solus were victims just as much as the Atlanteans were. Many are also more worried about providing for their families and keeping them safe than they are about questioning what the Ascended tell them.
Are they so distracted by their daily struggles that they don't question handing over their children to the court or to the gods they've never seen?
Alistair asked.
Or are they just that submissive?
I wouldn't confuse submission for distraction, and I wouldn't mistake obedience for stupidity when it's apparent that you know very little about the people of Solus, I stated coolly. Alistair's gaze swung to mine. What they have been told about the Atlanteans, about the gods and the Craven, is all they know. Generation after generation, they're taught to believe in the right and how much of an honor it is for their third sons and daughters to serve the gods. Raised to believe that only the Ascended and the gods stand between them and the Craven. I was raised the same way. I leaned forward, a little surprised to find that Kestiel didn't stop me. The gods belong to the people of Atlantia, do they not? Do your people believe in them, though they have never seen them? Silence fell around the table. It was Kieran who answered.
The gods have slept for hundreds of years, and only the oldest among the Atlanteans can remember seeing them. But we believe in them nonetheless.
I smiled tightly.
just as the people of Solus believe in them.
But not everyone within Solus follows King Jalara and Queen Ileana,
Alistair pointed out. There are many who have seen the truth, who support Atlantia. You're right. The dissenters. I exhaled slowly. I know I've had my suspicions throughout my life. I'm sure many others have as well, but for whatever reason, their eyes haven't been fully opened. I imagine a lot of that has to do with the stability of what one knows, even if it isn't comfortable. And I suppose a lot has to do with fear of acknowledging what is truly around us, what it means for us and those we care for. Alistair leaned back, eyeing me.
It's admirable.
What is?
Your utter lack of fear when speaking to me, talking to any of us, when you know what we are,
he said.
What we are capable of.
I met his stare. I'm not foolish enough to not feel fear when I know that any of you could kill me before I even have a chance to take my last breath. But fearing what you're capable of doesn't mean I fear you. Castile leaned in, his voice in my ear.
Still so incredibly brave, he murmured,
and that inexplicable warming returned to my chest.
I like her,
Alistair said to Castile after a heartbeat, and I thought he might actually mean that. Then I did what Kieran had suggested. I used my abilities once more. My senses stretched out, connecting to Alistair. I didn't sense anger from him, but there was the tanginess I often associated with sadness. I wasn't sure what could have evoked that response, but I thought he was being honest.
But back to how you and the prince met at this unique establishment. How was that possible?
Alistair's fingers tapped idly on the table, and I swore there was a collective sigh of relief that the topic had moved on.
With the ascensions being tied to you, I was under the impression that you were well guarded and kept...
He trailed off, as if he searched for the right word to use. Sheltered? I suggested. Caged? I was, for the most part, I added. I wasn't permitted to travel freely, only allowed to leave my room with one of my guards or my companion, and that was only to attend classes with the priestess, or to walk the castle grounds during certain times. Emil stopped, his cup halfway to his mouth, his brows knitting together. His eyes were a vibrant gold.
And the rest of the time you were expected to remain in your room? Even for meals?
I nodded. The Atlantean looked stunned, and someone murmured under their breath.
But you found a way to sneak out. I imagine that's extremely risky behavior. Someone could have taken you at any time during those explorations,
Alistair pointed out. What I felt from him was more guarded than a few moments before, but I still didn't detect the acidic burn of anger or hatred. If anything, he was more reserved than the last time we'd spoken, as was I.
Someone did take her, obviously.
Castile spoke up then, his thumb now tracing a distractingly slow, steady circle.
Ah, yes, you did take her.
Alistair inclined his chin.
But do you really intend to keep her?
Chapter 12.
I wouldn't be marrying her if I didn't plan on keeping her.
My hearing had to be faulty. Keep me? As if I were some sort of pet? Placing my hand over his as I fixed a smile on my face, I dug my nails into his flesh. Castile's thumb didn't miss a single sweep along my inner hip.
I can't help myself.
His lips brushed my cheek, and it took everything in me not to elbow him in the throat.
Penelope intrigued me from the first moment I spoke to her.
Intrigued, that word again.
I can see why.
Alistair tilted his head.
She's utterly unique, and most likely not what one would expect from the maiden.
She is unique and brave, intelligent and beautiful,
Castile agreed, apparently no longer content to drive me out of my mind with just his thumb. His fingers were involved now, sliding out from his palm and then gliding back.
And completely unexpected. But she is not the maiden, Alistair.
His chin grazed my shoulder as he turned his head to the wolven.
And if you refer to her as the maiden one more time, we are going to have a problem. Understand?
This time, when my muscles tensed, it was in response to his words.
Understood, Alistair murmured. Good.
Castile's chin drifted over the curve of my jaw as he sat back. Alistair was quiet for a moment, and then he addressed the men.
Make sure the horses are ready for when we check the roads.
Everyone at the table rose. Everyone but Delano and Nail. Those two remained even after Alistair flicked a pointed look in their direction.
If I called those men back, they would heed my summons,
Castile began, his fingers still sliding along my waist and hip.
And those who remain will only leave this table once I command it.
Alistair faced Castile.
I know this.
Glad to hear that, because for a moment there I thought you might have forgotten who commands whom here.
A shiver tiptoed down my spine, a reminder of whose lap I sat in.
This was not Hawk. He was the prince of a kingdom, and he would not be disobeyed.
I haven't, Castile. You know me better than that, which is why I must speak openly.
Then speak,
Castile replied quietly, and visions of him slamming his hand through Landell's chest danced before me.
You wish for me to do so right now?
Alistair's gaze flicked to me briefly.
Even if what I have to say is something you might not want to be spoken at this time.
A tingling sensation swept over me as Castile's fingers stilled on my hip. For a moment, I thought he would send me away.
You'd be surprised by what Penelope already knows.
Alistair lifted his brows. He planned to ransom me in exchange for his brother, I announced, deciding it sounded a little better coming from me. Alistair's eyes widened slightly. It's not a secret. Everyone at this table knows.
And that has changed?
Alistair queried softly, but neither Castile nor I had a chance to answer before he continued.
I've watched you grow from a small boy sitting at his mother's side to the man you are today, just as I watched Malik. And I wish every damn day that I would have gotten to watch him grow into the king he was destined to be. You two would do anything for each other, sacrifice anything.
The sacrifice anyone went unspoken, but it still lingered in the space.
And I understand the sense of obligation you carry within you. I understand more than most do, as I'm sure you remember.
Tension crept into Castile's body, and I knew that Alistair had struck a chord.
I know it's not like you've suddenly given up on your brother, no matter how intrigued you may be.
Alistair tipped toward us, his voice low.
Neither your mother nor your father wanted you to leave when you did. They understand why you felt you needed to, but you also know where they stand on this.
I know where they stand,
Castile stated, and instinct told me that Alistair was referring to Prince Malik.
And where do you stand?
Where I always have, with the Kingdom of Atlantia,
Alistair answered.
But I also would never expect you to give up on Malik. I wouldn't be able to if I were you. So I need to ask, is this engagement another ploy to gain your brother's freedom?
The fact that Alistair zeroed right in on what Castile was planning told me that he did know him as well as he claimed. I realized then that it wouldn't be me who needed to convince Alistair of the engagement's authenticity. It would have to be Castile. And if he couldn't, then what?
How does marrying Penelope have anything to do with my brother?
Castile's voice was level.
That's a good question.
Alistair leaned back. Perhaps you believe that taking what the Kingdom of Solus covets and putting her in line to be the eventual Queen of Atlantia will give you better bargaining power.
The fact that Alistair was yet again so on point with what Castile planned should have stunned me. It didn't. What took me by surprise was the eventual Queen of Atlantia part. I might have toppled out of the chair if it weren't for Castile's arm around me. It struck me then that Castile had left a very important part out when he discussed our arrangement. He was to become king.
Oh, we had so much to talk about, it wasn't even funny. Maybe this would put all of us in a position of better bargaining power,
Castile remarked. I bit down on the inside of my lip.
But, during the time spent at the capital and in Macedonia, I've come to accept that my brother is beyond my reach.
Lie, that was such a lie.
But I said nothing because I had the sense to remain quiet. Alistair was silent for a long moment, and then he exhaled heavily.
As much as I hate to say this, because I love both you and Malik as if you were my sons, I hope that is true. If only for your sake, and for the sake of the kingdom. It's far past time to let go.
I reached out with my senses again, this time not hesitating. Sincerity echoed through the invisible cord, tasting like warm vanilla.
It is, Castile said, and my ability stretched out toward him.
The burst of agony was tangy, coating my insides. My hand dropped to his out of instinct, and I only stopped